Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, where tour players, legends, and the top instructors in the game share their stories, insights, and playing lessons. Join Chris every week as he talks with the greats of the game.
You are the smartest guy I've spoken to on radio or television in my career.
And Chris, again, you're knocking out of the park. You're like 8 under par in this interview.
By having any research, I'm hiring your tail to be the research man. You're the best.
You're a fantastic host and tremendously respected in the golfing community.
Yeah, Chris, you do an amazing job, and your listeners are super lucky to have you, and it's always my pleasure.
Chris Mascaro is the king of the golf podcast. Don't miss him on Tuesdays.
Now, here's your host, Chris Mascaro.
Good evening, folks, and thank you for joining me again this week on Next on the Tee. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro. I hope you're having a fantastic week, and if for some reason you're not, well, I'm sending positive vibes your way. And speaking of positive things, thanks to all of you and my wonderful guests as well, this show took home two huge awards at the 2024 Communicator Awards this week. The show won an award of excellence for podcast host, very humbled to say that, and an award for distinction for podcast episodes and features. As I say all the time, this is all due to having fantastic guests who tell great stories and for you guys being the best supporters in the history of podcasts. Like I say, I am truly humbled by both awards. Very thankful to the judges and the folks over at the Communicator Awards. And as always, thanks to all of you. It has been a wonderful week so far, and I hope it is so far for you as well. All right, on to this week's show. Leading off part one is going to be our good friend Bill Bergen. Bill is one of the top golf course designers and architects in the history of our game. You guys know about the great work that he and Reese Jones have teamed up to do out at the Macklemore. Well, they've doubled down on that with a second outstanding course called The Keep, which is set to open up a little bit later on this summer, early fall time frame. I'll get an update for Bill for how that's going out there. Plus, we'll get updates on several other projects that he is working on around the country. He'll join me here in just a few minutes. Following him, we'll get our regular monthly visit from the confidence doctor, Dr. Bob Winters. Several of his students are out there having great success. With just a very small tip that we all already know how to do, he'll remind us what that is when he joins me about 25 minutes from now. Then over in part two, Joe Inman is going to make his Next on the Tee debut. You may recall that his younger brother John joined me a little bit earlier this year. Joe had a great college career at Wake Forest. He won the North and South Amateur Championship. He was a part of the victorious U.S. Walker Cup team in 1969, which got him into the 1970 Masters. Wait till you hear who he got paired with in the first two rounds. He won once out on the PGA Tour. He won three times on the Champions Tour, and it was a three-peat at the Pacific Bell Senior Classic. He also coached the men's team here at Georgia State University for several years, so a tremendous amount of stuff to get into with Joe this week. Really looking forward to having him as part of the show. And then we'll round things out with a return visit from David Abeles, the president and CEO of TaylorMade Golf. Somehow, they made their QI10 clubs and the new TP5 and TP5X golf balls even better than last year's equipment. I don't know how they do it. We'll talk R&D and learn a little bit from David. We'll also talk about the great success that the brand has had this year with players like Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda. Very excited to have David back as part of the show. He's one of my favorites as well. David and TaylorMade have been a part of this show since the very beginning, so it's always very special when he comes back and joins me here on Next on the Tee. So, folks, we're going to have a great time this week. I'm so glad you're here. Sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next couple of hours. Okay, before we get started, though, I want to remind you about our friends over at Kickpoint. Our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry, and I have been working with a company called Kickpoint, and they have done some magical things with our logos and created some polo shirts with some wonderful designs where they take our logos and turn them into designs on a polo shirt. They're absolutely outstanding. Kickpoint Golf is a private label custom golf apparel company making bespoke polo shirts, quarter zips, and hoodies for those selected clubs looking to take their branded game to a whole new level. If you want to check out their apparel, and again, it's going to knock your socks off, send an email to info@kickpointgolf.com. They'll get right back to you. There's no middleman. They're going to go right to the guys that do this work. You're going to check it out, and you are really going to love what they do. I'm going to start showing the polo shirts that they designed for me on my Instagram, at CT Mascaro. Check them out there so you can get a sample of what they look like. These guys know where it's at. Now let's talk about golf getaways and buddies trip locations. When you're thinking about that, think about our friends over at the Macklemore, which is a wonderful resort located just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee, high atop Lookout Mountain. It is a casual two-hour drive from Atlanta, Nashville, and Birmingham. The existing Highlands course is now ranked in the top 100 courses you can play in the U.S. by Golf Digest. The 18th hole is ranked in the top 10 finishing holes in the world. A second course, The Keep, is under construction and will open summer of 2024. The Keep is a Bill Bergen, Reese Jones design and features a mile and a half of dramatic cliff edge, with every inch of that edge filled up with a golf hole. A world-class hotel, Cloudland Lookout Mountain Curio Collection by Hilton, will open spring of 2024. Both have incredible views into historic Macklemore Cove, 1,200 feet below. You gotta see it to believe it, folks. Stay, dine, and play golf above the clouds at Macklemore. Go online to macklemore.com to book your stay and play package. Now let's talk about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade. From the very beginning, P790 irons have been rooted in clean aesthetics and thoughtful design. However, their true beauty is found beneath the surface. With AI-optimized weighting and speed foam air on the inside, every iron is uniquely designed to perform exactly how you need it to. As striking as they are on the outside, their true beauty lies within. Learn more about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade by checking out their website at TaylorMadeGolf.com. Okay, now backing, making it an even dozen times with me here on Next on the Tee is one of my all-time favorite guests and one of the top golf course designers in the history of our game, and that's Bill Bergen. You guys hear me bragging about what a great golf course the Macklemore is every single week here on the show, and what a wonderful experience my buddies and I have had the last couple of years that we've been up there. Well, I'm looking forward to being back on property again next month to see the new Cloudland Hotel, which had its grand opening last week. Maybe I'll get lucky and run into Bill and get a tour of the second course that he and Reese Jones have collaborated on up there. It's called The Keep. You remember Reese on the show a couple of months ago, he said the golf course is so good it could host a major one day. You'll recall that Bill played his college golf at Auburn University from 1978 to 1981, where he was named first team all SEC every year, and he helped Auburn win the 1981 SEC championship. He played in over 250 professional tournaments worldwide, including 3 U.S. Opens, 2 Open Championships, and over 50 PGA Tour events. Bill has been involved in well over 70 golf course design projects. In 2017, he was named one of the top 10 most innovative people in golf. You can go see his work online by visiting bergengolf.com, and I couldn't be more excited. I get to have him right back with me here on Next on the Tee again this week on the show. Bill, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Chris. I'm saying hello from Texas, all the way in West Texas. In fact, I can look out the window and see Mexico and New Mexico.
Oh, my. Good for you.
Yes. And somebody commented the other day, they go, you sure get to work in some pretty places. And boy, isn't that. I am very fortunate that my office has quite the view.
Bill, I love seeing the pictures you've been sharing with all of us about how things are progressing out there at the Keep. It has to be the most anticipated new course of the year. How do you feel about how things are coming out there?
So really exciting things happening. We have built the Keep, and now we are just finishing grassing it. And so there is prep work. There's bunker edging. And there's grassing, but there's no, you know, all the drainage is in, all the infrastructure's in, most of the cart paths are in. So we are just counting down now till we get it ready for play late this summer. And so I'm up every week. We have, I would say, every green but the second green has been seeded. So that's a big component in that getting all the greens ready. The reason the second green isn't seated yet is it was our main thoroughfare getting on and off the site. And so literally our haul road went right through the second green. So we've had to make alternative arrangements to get around the site. And we should approve that green for grassing either this coming Friday or next week.
For the folks that aren't familiar with the Keep and the work you've done, the course is going to have long stretches of holes along the cliff's edge. Talk about how many holes we're going to have along the edge of Lookout Mountain.
Yeah, so let's go back to Macklemore, and the 18th hole there, as you are well aware, sits on the edge of the cliff, and it drops 1,200 feet from the green site down into the valley below. And it is, you know, it's a good golf hole, but it's an incredible location, and it's so beautiful. It's kind of amazing that you get on that green site and you just want to take a picture. That hole has gotten so much attention and brought so much attention to Macklemore that we have now built and opened the Cloudland Hotel. And the Cloudland Hotel is gorgeous. It also sits on the edge of the cliff. So there is a theme going on here. And so we sit this hotel on the edge of the cliff, and we have an 18-hole golf course, Macklemore. Well, to fill up that hotel, we need more golf. And fortunately for us, Dwayne Horton, our managing partner, found a site 1.5 miles down the road from Macklemore on the same elevation and purchased it. And we have built the Keep. And this is an extraordinary golf course that if you kind of picture a crescent or half of an amphitheater, that's what this golf course looks like, with the entire eastern side on the edge of the cliff. And that's 5 golf holes that run the edge of the cliff. And whereas on the other course, you know, we got on the edge on the first green and on the 18th hole, and that was really it. This course, 5 holes on the edge, 18 holes looking over the edge. It is just phenomenal.
No kidding. It's amazing to me how you're able to do that. And like I say, I've been following the pictures all the time as you have sent out updates for how the course is progressing and maturing and that sort of thing. But to get that many holes on that stretch of land, how'd you do it?
Well, we were fortunate enough that our owners gave us free will to use the land the best we could. And so we put the whole golf course on the edge. So, you know, people have jokingly compared it to Pebble Beach. You know, you've got it running along the Pacific Ocean with really almost every hole you can see the ocean. Well, we're kind of like that, in that with every hole, certainly you either are looking at the cliff edge, or you turn around from the green site and look back down the hole you just played, and you're looking straight off for 70 miles out into the mountains in the distance.
Wow.
And so it really is incredible. And the difference between it and the first course is truly a mountain course. You need a golf cart. There are ups, there are downs, there are valleys, canyons, hills to climb. It's really, you know, typical mountain. It's very exciting. There are some, you know, really fun holes. There are some challenging holes. This course is traditional golf sitting on the edge of the mountain. It is totally walkable. It is on the plateau rather than on an angle. And so the ninth hole, I bet we don't have 20 feet of elevation change right on the edge of the cliff. And we barely moved any dirt to build this hole. We just basically routed it along the edge of the cliff. Didn't really have to do much. And that's kind of tongue-in-cheek, because our project manager, our contractor is Southeastern Golf out of Tifton, Georgia, and our project manager is Clyde Hall. And I looked at Clyde one day early, and we've been building this for 2 years, and I looked at Clyde and I said, "This is going to be an easy hole to build." And Clyde looks me dead in the eye, and he says, "Bill, there are no easy holes to build on this site." And it's going to look like it was easy to build, because it just fits so beautifully on the property. The problem was there was rock under the dirt everywhere. And so getting in irrigation and putting drain lines in and making some minor cuts all require either blasting or rock hammering. And so there's been a tat, 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 tat in my brain for about 1.5 years, which is a rock hammer, pounding rock. And it's the constant music that we hear when we're out on the Keep. And we can't wait to just hear the wind blow and hear guys and gals hitting golf balls. So that's going to be really exciting.
No doubt. And speaking of rock, as you posted pictures of the 14th through the 17th hole the other day out on social media, what I'm guessing is hole 17 has a wonderful outcropping of rock that's kind of, in a semicircle around the back part of the green. Was that a gift from God that you guys used to lay out that hole, or did you have to sculpt that rock to turn out that way?
No, so that was a gift from God and persistence from Dwayne Horton, because during the routing process, the golf course, I said to Dwayne, it's a V. It's a draw going up a slight hill, but it was V-shaped and deep. And so I said, you know, that topography is just not very good right there. And he said, oh, we got to go walk it. You've got to see this. And so he literally convinced me to accept this as the 17th hole. And so the rock, we call it the Coliseum because there's rock really all the way around you. We did not have to touch it. We did not blast. We did clean it off, which is kind of a beautiful process where they just kind of expose the rock at the base a little bit. But we ended up filling 16 to 20 feet of dirt in the low part through the middle of the hole. And it created this beautiful 60-yard wide in places landing area for you to hit driver. And then it narrows up at the green where you feel like you're totally surrounded by the boulders. And it almost, I will tell you, when you see it for the first time, you think Disney came in here and created it. It is that surreal, but it's all natural. It's all real. And it was all there. And our team has done a phenomenal job of creating this beautiful short par four that will be unforgettable.
As you mentioned a little bit ago, and I've talked on this show for years, 18 is the signature hole there at Macklemore. Do you have a signature hole that you're looking at for the keep, or is it there just so many really good ones? It's hard to say one is going to be the signature over the others.
So our opinion is if you brought 18 people out there, you'd probably have 12 favorite holes. They're all good, but you'd probably have 12 favorite holes. It's that diverse. And what people like changes. The 17th is remarkable. I'm partial to the 8th and the 10th holes, which the 8th plays is a par 3 that plays out to the mountains, to the edge of the cliff. And then the 10th hole is a long par 5 on the edge of the cliff. And during the routing process, I just felt like we have to have this hole. It's funny, routings take on a lot of different configurations. You have a lot of options. And this was a site that you could route dozens of different directions. I mean, you really could go so many different ways with it. And that hole just was one that I felt needed to be part of the golf course. And it is. And so it's a phenomenal long par 5 along the edge. Plenty of room to play, but very exciting.
As you alluded to a little while ago, you had to, with Macklemore, you had to do a lot of blasting, a lot of dynamiting, and taking tons of rock off that golf course. Was this that times 10, or was it very similar?
So this would have been, on a prorated basis, a lot less. We had to blast the second green, which we just built, and we didn't end up really lowering it. We just had to blast it in order to get in drainage, irrigation, subgrade the green. The elevation is the same as what the center line was before we started. And then we blasted, a few other holes, but not very much. We rock hammered all the time. And so that was the difference. So it wasn't so much blasting. We're probably under budget on blasting and massively over budget on rock hammering.
So as I mentioned in the intro, when I had Reese Jones on the show a few months ago, he talked about how beautiful this golf course is going to be. And it's so fantastic that he said, hey, look, you could hold a major on this golf course at some point. Do you agree? Can you see a tour event or a major there?
I'll tell you what. So we stretch to 7,700 yards. We have a 200-acre golf course. So most golf courses, you know, when you clear them, you clear about 100 acres. And it's funny, the math is kind of simple on golf. Traditionally, it used to be 30 acres of fairway, 60 acres of rough. There's your 90 acres. And, you know, you cleared 100 acres. There's your golf course. Well, on this one, we cleared 200 acres. We have 70 to 80 acres of fairway grass. And we have a big scale, and the big scale also allows for big gallery. There's plenty of room, and it is very exciting with the hotel just down the street. You know, it could hold something really special. I, you know, when I look at it, if I was going to give you a comparison to something, I actually go Whistling Straits. And the reason, which just held a Ryder Cup, and I went to it a few years ago. Whistling Straits is, you know, on Lake Michigan with lots of dunes, lots of native grass and beautiful holes winding in and out of that. We don't have the dunes for one, we didn't ever want to block the view. Two, we didn't have the dirt to do that even if we wanted to. But so we have this golf course that just lays on the ground so beautifully, separated by tall fescues. We have stadium zoysia grass in our fairways and our roughs, although we will be a fairway cut and a second cut golf course. Our deep rough will be fescue, with the kind you don't play out of. I mean, you could get lucky and play out of it, but it's not it. We're not saying you're going to hit balls out of the fescue very often. So it's going to have this just incredible, great look of contrast between, you know, the carpet-like zoysia fairways and then the texture and elevation of the native grasses. And then mix in, you know, white sand and exposed rock. And that's kind of the visual you get at the Keep.
So let's go all the way back before this project started for the second course there at the Keep, because it's not like right next door to Macklemore in that the first hole, the 10th hole, and the first hole and the 10th hole aren't around the clubhouse there at Macklemore. It's a little ways away. I mean, you can see it, but that sort of thing. But
yeah, it's funny, from the 9th tee, you see the hotel very nicely, but it's a good mile and a half down the road.
And remind me, when the idea of building a second course, weren't you sort of traipsing around through thicket and all kinds of craziness to go down to find a piece of land? And all of a sudden, there it was. And you're like, this is where it needs to go.
That was the 18th hole on the old course, on the original. So okay. that was the 18th hole. This one, fortunately, we had, you know, I wouldn't call them logging roads, but we had trails through this property. And so we could drive and walk the property. Now, I did do all of that with marking clearing. Oh my gosh, I'm amazed I didn't run over a rattlesnake somewhere along the way. But literally, my team marked every clearing line, all the you know, saved trees, everything that we marked the whole golf course out when it was raw. And you were on some incredibly sharp slopes. We definitely got in shape on those days.
So let's switch gears a little bit. You've got several other projects underway. You mentioned you're out there in El Paso, Texas. I'm guessing you're working on Coronado, which looks like another beautiful golf course. Talk about that project.
So Coronado is a course from the 50s that I think held maybe a Hogan Tour, which would have been the early days of what is now the Corn Ferry Tour. And actually, some of my friends played it, and they texted me along the way telling me about how steep the greens were, and they were. There were greens running at 5%. It's a mountain sloped golf course. Just picture a wedge. It's on an angle. Clubhouse sits high, and the property just moves down the hill. And so you're either going up or down the hill, not across the hill very often, but literally you're in El Paso, Texas, to the left as you look from the clubhouse out. You see beautiful rock mountains, and that's Mexico. Juarez is across the way. And then as you look straight out from the golf course, you get a $1 million sunset every single evening, and that's New Mexico. And so it's interesting. So we had more rain at Big Canoe, one of my projects, this past weekend than we will get all year at Coronado.
Wow.
We get 4 inches of rain a year. Houston would have probably liked to give us a little bit of water last week. But 4 inches of rain, so it's a completely different landscape than I am used to. Now, I'm very used to rock and mountains and slopes and all of that, but more in a rainforest-type environment like, you know, Western North Carolina and the Highlands area where we work a lot. And so this is, you know, it's dry, it's rock. But I love it. And it's a golf course that, you know, we're pretty excited about because it needed renovation. And so some projects you work on, start out at a fairly high level and you take them higher. Other projects start out as at a medium level, and there's really a lot of upside. And this project is a ton of upside. And we're halfway grassed out on the greens. We'll have all the greens grassed in the next 2 weeks. And so we'll be winding down the project in early June, and they'll be playing it later in the summer.
You've also got another course, the Lynx at Audubon. Talk about the project that's going on over on that property.
Yeah, so that's a public facility that the city of Memphis owns, and they gave me an existing golf course and additional park land near at Audubon Park. The botanical gardens are there. The theater for the city is there. University of Memphis is across the street. It's a really neat area. And they said, build the best golf course you can, and that we want to move the clubhouse, and we want the old clubhouse to be the maintenance building. And so it was really a raw rectangle that I was able to reroute and build a new golf course. And it opens around the 1st of July. I was there last month and very excited about it. It's growing in nicely. It will definitely be ready to go, and it will be the jewel of Memphis golf, public golf. And so it's kind of exciting. You know, I mentioned this maybe before with you, but a lot of the clubs we work on are private, and not everybody can go play them. In fact, it's very difficult to play some of them. And so with Audubon and then Pines Crossing down at Auburn and the Keep and Macklemore, people can play these golf courses. And so it's very exciting that, you know, your listeners, if they get intrigued by one of these and want to check it out online, they can actually go play. And that's exciting for me.
You're also, I believe, going to be doing some work down at Crown Colony, where our good friend Tom Patry used to teach. What's the status of that project?
So we just got approved to start construction drawing. So very exciting. So we master planned. Master planning is concept planning, budgeting, all the ideas that go into a project. But a club usually goes, that's sort of phase one. And phase two is, yes, we're going to do it. And Crown Colony just gave us the yes, we're going to do it. In fact, I was drawing grading plans for Crown Colony on the airplane from Atlanta to El Paso today. And so very excited about that. It's out a couple years before we start, but we have to go through all the construction drawings, permitting, bidding, all that stuff happens now. But a really nice golf course. And I'm sorry Tom's not there, but I'm sure our paths will cross again. So I've enjoyed, Tom and I have known each other since early days in college, and what a good friend he is.
Bill, just a couple more before I let you go, and switching gears just a little bit. You played in 3 U.S. Opens, and you know what a huge Jack Nicklaus fan I am. My favorite of his 4 U.S. Open victories is the one in 1980 that was held at Baltusrol. You played in that Open as an amateur that year. What do you remember about playing in that U.S. Open and about that week?
Well, I was a college kid. I was 21 and looked 16, and that was my first time. I played in a U.S. amateur, one U.S. amateur, so I played in a USGA event, but I'd never played in anything professional. And it's so funny, you think about going from college golf, and today's college golfers are at a different level. They are so experienced, they're so mature, they're so good. We were not experienced, and I'm not saying we weren't good, because we played with some really great players, you know, Paul Azinger, Bob Tway, Fred Couples, all kinds of great players back then, but we were not experienced like these guys today. So I go tee it up at Baltusrol, and I think Jack beat me by 16 shots the first day, but I did break 80, and he shot 63, and it was phenomenal. My dad caddied for me. He was more nervous than I was. That was fun. And I got to play with Gene Littler in a practice round, because Tim Simpson and Chip Beck made arrangements. And those Georgia boys took good care of me. I'm sure Tim will remember. I'm not sure Chip would. But I played my practice rounds with those guys. And they treated me great. And it was such a great experience. And then I got to play at Pebble a couple years later as a pro, and then Olympic Club. Also, so 3 U.S. Opens on three great golf courses, and especially looking back, my playing career was mediocre and probably not even that good, but I got a great taste of professional golf. I just didn't succeed at it very well, But as an architect, to look back on those days and to have that experience is really valuable to me.
One more, Bill, and I'm just kind of curious to get your thoughts on something. If Augusta National called you one day and said, "Hey, Bill, we love what you're doing. We'd like to have you come out and help us tweak a couple of the golf holes," would that be something you'd be excited to do? Or is that like being asked to, as a painter, to go touch up the Mona Lisa? It's an honor, but hugely intimidating.
Yes, you are correct. So I've been able to work on some really good golden age projects, Ross, Rainer, Langford, and a Tillinghast, but they had all been altered previously. And so it wasn't touching a masterpiece. It was really more the charge was, hey, can you bring this masterpiece back to something that is similar to what those original architects would have done? Interestingly enough about Augusta, the bunkering that Mackenzie did looks nothing like what they have today. I mean, nothing. It's not even close. In fact, I don't know that you can find Mackenzie bunkering that looks like Augusta today. It's really interesting to see the old green sites. There's photographs out there of all the green sites at Augusta. And so that's an interesting thing. I would welcome the opportunity, and I would be anxious as could be. No doubt about it. So, when it gets down to it, golf course design is a blend of creativity and mathematics and experience. And we have all those.
Bill, how can our listeners go online and check out all the great things you're doing, plus follow you over social media as well?
Yeah, so our website is burdengolf.com. After this conversation, my wife will tell me I need to update it because I need to do that periodically because we have a lot of cool stuff that's been going on. And then we're real active on social media. So Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, burdengolf is all you need to know. And you'll find us. And we document our projects as we go along for the most part. And so I love posting things during construction. I will say dirt photos they look a lot better to your eye than they do in a photograph because it sort of all blends into nothing. But once you start grassing and putting some sand in the bunkers, it really starts to show off. And so it's a lot of fun. I enjoy the social media documentation of the projects. And so people are welcome to comment or whatever they'd like. So we enjoy sharing that stuff. So Chris, it's always good to be on with you. I know that Joe Inman is coming up tonight, and
yes,
Joe is a friend of mine from a long time. And I met Joe when I was a teenager, and he was a tour pro, and I've been a fan of his ever since.
Well, Bill, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come back and be a part of the show, like I said at the top, for a 12th time. Absolutely one of my all-time favorite guests and people on the planet, for that matter. I can't thank you enough for everything you've meant to me in this show and for your time tonight. I hope I get that privilege of catching up with you, hopefully seeing you up at the Keep here in about a month or so.
We should do a show from up there one day.
Love to. Let's do it.
Do remote shows, but that would be fun.
It would.
And I personally do want to give you a tour because I'll give you all the ins and outs and all the fun things that happened. It's something special. Everybody keep their eyes open for the Keep.
Look forward to it. Take care, Bill. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you, Chris. See ya.
See ya, Bill. That is the great Bill Bergen, folks, and his projects are off the chain. Great. I mean, the Keep just looks fantastic. I mean, I can't tell you how excited I am to go out there and see that property. Look, Macklemore is also great. Look, the 18th hole, which he mentioned and we talked a little bit about, has been named one of the greatest finishing holes on the planet. And that's not an exaggeration. It's truly like that. Go out there and check it out and see for yourself if you're not familiar with it. But that golf course is beautiful. The Keep is probably going to take that to an even higher level. And then when you look at his other projects, those are outstanding as well. I mean, the Coronado looks like it's going to be a great golf course. And, you know, the links at Audubon, another great golf course. His style and the way that he puts together a golf course just make that landscape so beautiful. And the way that he lays it in just perfectly, it's just like he is an artist. So I can't tell you how excited I am to see the Keep. We'll let you know. And what a great idea. Let's do a show from there. That would be just wonderful. Coming up next, we're going to get our monthly visit from the confidence doctor, Dr. Bob Winters. Before I get to Dr. Bob, I was talking with Eddie Dry, VP of Domestic Sales for Strixon Cleveland Golf, at the PGA Merchandise Show earlier this year, and I said, Eddie, I like your CBX full-face wedges. How can they help an average player like me play better? Here's what he had to say.
An average player, I use one, and I'm in some lies that you can't even believe. And I need all the help I can get. And the face is bigger, and the grooves go all the way up and all the way out to the toe. So if you hit it on the toe, you miss it, bam, there's a groove. So I like that. So I carry a 58.
There you have it, folks. Try the new CBX full-face wedges from Cleveland Golf. I also want to give a shout-out to my friends over at On Point Golf and their great On Point ball marker. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with On Point, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023 and they were using an On Point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use On Point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. Now let's talk grips. I want to tell you about Lampkin grips. Every shot, as you know, has its own unique feel. The trick? Feel comfortable with each one. And comfort is built into the very DNA of Sonar Plus Black Grips. Composed of their Genesis material that provides supreme comfort and durability, with their fingerprint technology, creates a strong connection and unforgettable touch. The game changes from shot to shot. The feel on your hand shouldn't. Lampkin. Feel is everything.
Chris, good evening. It's great to talk with you.
Always is. I can't thank you enough for being back with me this week.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's been so much has gone on since this past month, since the last time I was on the show, and I'm just really excited to talk about it with you.
Yeah, please. So, look, it has been a few weeks, obviously, since we had the opportunity to spend some time with you. So catch us up. What's been going on with you over the last month?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've had, you know, the opportunity to work with so many great junior and college players, you know, and some new, you know, tour players. And, you know, when I was out working with one of my professional development young, you know, players, I got, you know, another hole-in-one. I've got hole-in-one.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, I got hole-in-one number 9. It was at the Reunion Resort. And I was, you know, just showing, you know, this young player. And I said, hey, listen, this is really what you've got to be. And it was almost, I was doing a Hamlet testimonial. And, you know, William Shakespeare would have made a great golf psychologist because when he wrote the play Hamlet, and in Act 3, Scene 1, it was the famous nunnery scene where Polonius and the king were hiding, and Hamlet comes out, and he comes out with his great soliloquy. He says, to be or not to be? You know, that is the question. He was talking about whether he was going to commit suicide or choose to live. And I was talking to my player, Morgan, and I told him, I said, this is to be or not to be. You have to be committed, you know, and you have the choice to be engaged with the target. And for me, I said, this is one of those, you know, opportunities where, you know, if you really believe that this ball is going to go in the hole, that's really where it usually ends up going. That's, you know, the focused and directed mindset. And it was 162 yards to this pin, and it was really a tough pin, and it had, you know, the bunker that was kind of raised up in front of, you know, the green. So you really couldn't see it. And so he hit his ball like about 15 feet from the hole. It was a great shot for my student. And I stepped up there with a 7-iron and I made a great strike. And you know, when you hit a great strike, I mean, it feels like butter and it just comes off so sweetly. And I said, this has got a chance. And I didn't see it. And I didn't see it go in the hole, but I knew it was really close. And for those people who've ever had a hole in one, or you know, really believe they're going to make a hole in one, when you don't really see it go in and you actually, you know, drive up or walk up to the green, you're looking around and you're looking in the front bunkers. Did it fall in the bunker? Did it go over the green? And then I only see one ball. It's about 15 feet, you know, from the hole. And so I look at Morgan and I go, I don't see my ball behind the green here. And I said, could it be? And as I walked up into, you know, the cup, and I actually put that on Instagram, I want everybody to see my surprised look. And by golly, there was, you know, my golf ball right in the hole. And it was number 9. But I got to tell you, I was as excited to make number 9 as I ever was making, you know, number 1 through 8. It was, you know, and if you saw my smile was like one of these great, big, huge Cheshire cat grins. And it was really exciting. And from there, you know, we've been traveling. We've been, you know, one of the keynote speakers out in Las Vegas. I was out there for about a week. And now I've had a lot of, you know, students, you know, a lot of junior students winning. You know, we've got a lot of college teams who are now in the NCAAs. And I want to give a shout out to my alma mater, to Ball State University. Big kudos. Congratulations to Coach Mike Fleck and the Ball State Cardinals for winning the Mid-American Conference Championship. It was held at Chatham Hills there in Westfield, Indiana. And they had a huge Ball State contingent. And it was the only Mid-American Conference school, you know, from Indiana that was represented in the state of Indiana. And they went on to win, you know, a great championship. And now they're getting ready to go to University of North Carolina to play in the North Carolina NCAA Division Regional. And so I will be talking with them here this next week, getting their minds ready to actually do well there and advance on to the finals. And also congratulations to Coach Mike Fleck, who was actually elected Coach of the Year in the Mid-American Conference. And he's done a fantastic job since he took over the reins, you know, of my former coach, Coach Earl Yustigsmeyer. And Coach Fleck, you know, deserves all the kudos, and the Ball State Cardinals. They have built a great program. And, you know, through the legacy of alums, like so many, like myself, the hundreds that have played at Ball State University, it's just a great school, a great golf school, and they've got a great tradition. And so go Cards, fly high, score low. That's what I always tell them. Fly high,
awesome.
Fly high and score low. So, you know, it's good. I wanted to talk to you tonight, Chris, about something that I'm working on. And I've got all these different projects, but I was with a young man today, and I think you'll find this interesting, as that, you know, as many young people, you know, boys, girls, men, or women, I don't care how old you are, you get so frustrated with this game, and when things really don't go well, and you become emotionally distraught, you become discouraged, you become frustrated. I've always said that there's a great equation that says when your results don't equal or match your expectations, you become frustrated, angry, and discouraged. So I had a young man today, and he was talking about, you know, just getting so discouraged, and I tried to help him understand is that if you want to shoot low scores, this is the ultimate paradox in golf. You have to give up the notion of wanting to shoot low scores, because the most important number in golf is 1. And as we were going on and we were playing 3 or 4 holes, I looked at him and his mood became, you know, very dour, very sullen, very sunken. And I asked him, I said, what's going on? He goes, gosh. He goes, Dr. Bob, he goes, I'm already like 4 over. And I go, hold on. I thought we were talking about playing one shot at a time and letting go of score. He goes, I just don't know how to really turn it around. And I, you know, talked to him. And since I was just out in Las Vegas and I was one of the keynote speakers for the Pitts Aesthetic Group, and they are a group of international orthodontists and oral surgeons that help people smile. And I said to him, I said, you know, one of the things that you can do is you can actually smile before you step into a golf shot. Because when you smile, you create a huge hormonal response. You create, you know, 3 hormones. You create dopamine, serotonin, and you actually elicit a lot of endorphins. And this is, you know, really big science, and it goes way back to the 1800s, Chris, when there was a French scientist by the name of Guillaume Duchesne, who was studying smiles and was studying the psychological and physiological effects of smiling. So what I was doing with this young player is that I was role modeling in stepping into the ball and smiling before I hit each shot. And that's really something that we worked on today. And what most people don't realize is that when you do smile, I mean, you activate two facial muscles. And the first one is the one around your mouth. That's called the zygomatic major. And, you know, when we have, you know, wrinkles around the mouth, that's sort of, you know, really what we say. And you can control that at will. I mean, you can even be listening to my voice right now and smile. And all of a sudden, as soon as you smile, you start activating these wonderful hormones. But there's another aspect about your facial muscle that I learned, you know, at this wonderful seminar, is that it's the orbicularis oculi. It's the eye muscles. A lot of people talk about the crow's feet. We cannot activate this, you know, facial muscle at will. So when people have a real smile, you'll see it around the corner of their mouth and you'll see it in their eyes. And that's what I've always tried to help people understand, is that if you really want to get control of your emotions, of your feelings, you know, you first have to have a thought, is that I'm going to generate a smile. And so when I step into the ball, you know, I was smiling today. And I remember many years ago playing a round of golf with the late Bart Bryant, you know, and Brad and Bart Bryant, the Bryant brothers. And Bart, you know, looked at me. He goes, Dr. Bob, he goes, do you ever realize you're smiling when you hit the golf ball? And I told Bart, I said, I don't know if I'm smiling. I might be pursing my lips, but I said, I have a dimple over here on my left side of my cheek. And I said, when I was a little boy, when my mother thought I was lying, my dimple would always show up. So I always got a whooping because my mom would see that smile. But I remember Bart Bryant said that to me. And I thought to myself today, when I was working with this young student, I said, hey, why don't we actually, you know, do something? Have, you know, a strategy of smiling. And because a lot of people don't realize that, you know, smiling, I mean, through an evolutionary process, it is the most universal of languages. You know, when people see another person smile, they see someone who is approachable. They see someone, you know, who is positive, someone who's happy. And we always hear in my world, Chris, you know, fake it till you make it. And I've never really liked that because I think that's false, you know, deception of a perception that you do not have. But I always say you do it until you become it. And so what I found today, when this player starts smiling, even forcing a smile before he stepped in, that he didn't have to smile all the way through his swing, but he just had to smile as he stepped into the ball. You know, what, you know, he actually found out was he was more relaxed. He was more in control of his swing. And he actually hit a string of really successively good, efficient golf shots. Now, a lot of people would say, well, this is sort of pseudoscience, but it isn't, because there's been great, you know, research over the years from researchers at University of Oregon, University of Washington, who have studied facial behavior and body language. And smiling is such a huge, huge thing. And it's just something that I think right here on Next on the Tee, I just really want to put it out there to people. The next time you're having a really bad, bad day, is just chuck it off, smile before you go into your next shot, and then just see what happens. Do a little bit of experiment on yourself and see really where it takes you. Because I got to tell you, you know, I know that it works.
That's fantastic advice. I love that. And as you were telling that story, if you will, I kept smiling to myself. And even just sitting here listening to you tell the story and being here in the studio, when I smiled, I could tell that I felt better. So well, yeah, the idea of getting over a shot, we get tensed up and all that sort of thing. If you smile while you're getting over the shot, standing over the ball, that's got to help you.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny how, you know, one of the most important things, you know, that I've always seen people do is that you can just do a human behavior experiment. You just look at somebody, just, you know, and walk up to somebody. And look at them in the eye and just smile. And many times, almost 9 times out of 10, you'll get a smile in return. I mean, it's that reciprocal effect. And sometimes, you know, you're going to get Mr. Grumpy out there, but nothing's going to make that person smile because they are choosing. It's like to be or not to be. They're not going to be happy today. There's nothing that you can do. But that's the whole point, is that people talk about all these different strategies that, you know, sports psychologists and mental gurus and everybody have. But I've, you know, been taking a look at this, you know, now for a while. And to lighten the load, and I've always loved the saying that angels fly high because they consider themselves lightly. They don't take themselves so serious. They don't, you know, make the game work. And I know that, you know, I've got, you know, Joe Inman on after me. But I got to tell you, he is one fantastic person. I had the chance to work with Joe back in the mid 80s, right when I was really bringing out a lot of sports vision, sports psychology stuff. And he is way, you know, ahead of his time. And he really wanted to learn about all this stuff, about how to use your vision and how to see lines and greens and dominant eye and everything. So had a chance to spend some time with Joe. So that was awesome. And he's just a fascinating guy. And the one thing I will tell you here on Joe is that he emphasized the importance of your grip. Now, just not putting the hands on the club, but taking care of your hands at night. I mean, he would condition his hands with lotion and really, you know, rub it in and really get his hands nice and soft, because, you know, these are the actual, you know, phalanges. These are the things that attach, you know, to the golf club. And it was something, you know, so I was teaching him about how to use his vision and how to use his mind. And I was just, you know, learning from him how to take care of your body. Because, you know, on tour, I mean, hitting balls day after day, your hands take an unbelievable beating. And I remember the late, great Andy Bean, who I did a lot of things with, I would see his hands, and his hands were always rough and dry. And he would always use super glue to actually, you know, stop, you know, some of those splits in his fingers. Mm. And it was amazing, you know, the difference, you know, in the two guys, you know, approach. You know, Andy was just trying to get his hands as tough and as calloused as they could be. And Joe was trying to get his, you know, as soft and supple so he'd have that great eye-hand coordination feel. And so it was really good. I mean, I just loving all the people on the show. And it's funny how, you know, you hang around, you know, the golf world so long, you know, you start to know everybody, right?
Yeah.
You know? And you run into them and whatever. So, you know, that's awesome. So I think this tip of just smiling, you know, in between shots or even before you even step into a shot, and just that simple act, because it is an immediate effect and it triggers off some really feel good, mood regulating neurotransmitters, hormones in the brain. And it really just, you know, it goes through your body, permeates every cell in your body immediately. And it really, you know, may do, you know, a lot of good for a lot of golfers just to try it. And I tell you what, even if they hit a bad shot, at least they look happy doing it.
Yeah. Indeed. I love that piece of advice. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, you're more than welcome.
Dr. Bob, this is fantastic stuff. And I know I'm going to be putting it to good use in my golf game as well. Before I let you go, remind our listeners again how they can stay up to date with what you're doing, follow you online, on social media, and get copies of your book.
Well, they can, you know, get copies of my books at Amazon.com. I've got, you know, several different, you know, titles out there. The Mental Art of Putting, The Mistake-Free Golf, The Ten Commandments of Mind Power Golf. They can get a hold of me at TheConfidenceDoctor.com. They can follow me on Dr. Bob Winters, Dr. Robert Winters, or you can go to DavidLedbetter.com and you can find me at Golf Zone Ledbetter. So there's a lot of places, you know, people can find me. And I tell you what, Chris, it's always great to be on Next on the Tee with you. You know, you're always so much fun to talk with. I know that I actually sometimes get on my little pulpit here and just go off on a tangent. But I got to tell you, I just really wanted you to know that when I talk with you right now, I'm smiling right now.
That's awesome. Doc, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your schedule to come back and be a part of the show again this month. I always look forward to it. You always make me feel better about myself, and you give us so many good tips for how to make our golf games better, whether it's actually in the swing or, more importantly, from a confidence perspective. And this smile thing is something I am absolutely going to add to my golf game. So thank you very much.
Well, you're more than welcome, Chris. And by the next time I talk to you next month, hopefully I will have hole number 10. And I'll be in double digits. And I'll tell you what, you want to talk about smiling then I'll. You know, I just might be laughing all the way to the bank. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
All right.
Take care, Doc. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Chris. Okay, bye-bye.
See you, Dr. Bob. That is the great Dr. Bob Winters. Again, theconfidencedoctor.com is where you can find him online, and then at Dr. Bob Winters on social media. That is an amazing tip. Look, how simple is it to smile your way to a better score, right? I was doing it while he was telling the story, if you will. I smile, and suddenly, I mean, really, I felt a little bit better. Don't we all? If you smile during the day, don't you just feel just a little bit better, at least for those moments? So if you smile as you're addressing the golf ball, if you smile as you're standing over it, doesn't it make sense? For those moments, you're going to feel better. You're going to relieve tension and stress from your golf swing. And maybe the results are going to turn out to be better as well. Doc is fantastic. He always has something better for us. So I'm very excited about this thing, and I'm looking forward to having him back on the show again next month. All right, that's going to wrap up part one of this week's show. My sincere thanks to Bill Bergen and Dr. Bob Winters for making this part of the show so much fun to do. Coming up, don't forget, in part two of this week's show, Joe Inman, a wonderful guy and a fantastic college and professional player, and then went on to be a great college coach for a little while here at Georgia State. He'll make his next On the Tee debut with me. And then we're going to round it out with the president and CEO of TaylorMade Golf, David Abeles, who is always fantastic and so informative. Learn a lot every time David's a part of the show, and can't thank him enough. Those guys at TaylorMade have been a supporter of this show since the very beginning. So every time David joins me, it's a special segment. Come back, join us then. Until that time, hit them straight, my friends.